Hello, everyone. Welcome to the KE Report. I'm Shad Markwich, your host, and I'm talking today with Joel Elkanen, co-host of the Benziga Pre-Market Prep Show, and also co-host of PremarketPrep.com, where Joel shares all kinds of insights with macro investing and trade ideas with investors. And Joel, it's always great to have you on the show, just to get your thoughts on these crazy and wild markets. So I'd be remiss if we didn't start off with the big news of last week, which was the hot CPI reading that came in for November. Some people thought we may start seeing inflation tamp down a bit more, but it came in at 6.8%. That, of course, got everybody into an uproar that clearly inflation is not transitory, and it's going to be something the Fed's going to have to address sooner rather than later. So they're now talking about speeding up their tapering. What do you make of all this, Joel, and what do you make of the macro backdrop this has all created?
Shad, thanks for having me on this turbulent Tuesday afternoon in the markets. What I think is that Jerome Powell has done one hell of a job, you know, navigating, you know, our economy through the pandemic. Whatever policies he had at his disposal to use has brought the country and maybe the world for that matter out of a very dark time. I think notwithstanding the pandemic, you would have been at a point in the economic cycle where interest rates would have been going up anyways, right? But now you have this extraneous factor coming in. They had to ease more. They had to put more money into the economy. And the end result is more inflation. So it's taken him some time for him to, you know, assess the situation. He's been criticized for being behind it. But what I think what he did with that statement, and that just my opinion, is that he's trying to buy some time. You know, he moved off the stance that, you know, it was transitory. He's recognized the supply chain's issues. And I think what he's just trying to do, I mean, I don't expect a much different tone coming out of the meeting tomorrow, right? Because you had the bad PPI data. So I think you already got what the Fed's going to do when he said not transitory. Maybe speed up the end of the bond buying until March instead of June. And maybe get your first hike in June instead of, you know, later in the year. Is there going to be 1 to 2 hikes in 2022, or are there going to be 2 to 3, right? Is there going to be 3 to 4 in 2023 or 4 to 5? So I think that that's what the street will be looking for tomorrow from the meeting. And, of course, the Q&A is the one that moves the market just as much.
Yeah, Joel, you know every word that Jerome Powell utters is going to be parsed and then rehashed by the market, the mainstream media, the algos. And as we shift over from turbulent Tuesday to watchful Wednesday tomorrow with all eyes being on this FOMC meeting, you're right. A lot of times it's the Q&A session that really gets things moving. But we often see a lot of head fakes in the market. You know,
yeah.
Things will be quiet during the comments, and then they'll start reacting as they say certain things, and then those will flip-flop back. So
yes,
there's a little bit of market turbulence going into these meetings and coming out of them. But it's ultimately going to come down to what is their policy going to be? Are they going to, in fact, speed up their tapering so they can get done earlier and get to the business of fighting inflation? I mean, I don't think that a 0.25% or a 0.5% rate hike is really that big of a deal. But to the point you just made, a series of rate hikes, now that's a different story. So if
yes,
they lay out a policy that there is going to be 2 to 3 hikes next year, possibly 3 to 4 the year after, do you think a series of rate hikes, the market looking at that, could that impact the general markets and could that be a headwind to the general markets?
What it will do is it will pressure your growth stocks, right? And you're already seeing that. You're seeing the continued deterioration. The reason is because these stocks trade at extremely high multiples, right? And so their earnings power moving forward is going to be diminished by higher inflation. So it's going to have effect on those stocks. But, you know, your value stocks that are making money, you know, now, and will continue to have their earnings power, you know, there's just a clear rotation. Now, I'm not calling for the, you know, the end of the Cathie Wood and the growth stocks, but, you know, you have to look at the buying power of future earnings in a higher interest rate environment. You know, good for the banks, right? Is it good for other sectors? I don't know, but it's just going to emphasize the fundamental analysis that I've been following for 100 years, maybe to my own detriment or not, you know, I like companies that make money, and they make money now. So that, you know, it's going to reinforce the value versus the growth sector trade.
Do you like the idea that a lot of people have mentioned that in an inflationary environment, it's the companies that can set their own prices that really can be more nimble and can still continue to grow because they've got that pricing power versus some companies that are really dependent upon other subcontractors, other industry to supply them, and so they don't have as much pricing power? Do you think that that would be some of the things leaning in more in favor of the value stocks versus some of the growth stocks or tech stocks that don't even have income yet?
Excellent point. I agree. It's just, you know, where's the tipping point? You know, how much can Procter & Gamble raise prices? You know, how much more are people going to want in wages? So there's always that elasticity that you have to find. But yeah, if you can set your own prices, yeah, then sure, it gives you, you know, whereas if you're, you know, depending on other contractors, no. But yeah, I agree with your sentiment on that one 100%.
Yeah, Joel, well, as we move forward, you'd mentioned that companies need to be cognizant of the wages they pay and the labor in tandem with the rising input cost and rising inflation cost. But the Fed has got to deal with this as well. And so they've got that dual mandate where they want to have maximum employment and they want to have good prices. But both of those are going off the rails a little bit. We've got companies that have to raise their prices to deal with inflation, so they've got to pass those along. And it's a lot more than 6.8% in many areas of daily life. I mean, we've been talking about this till we're blue in the face, but there's a lot bigger increase at my grocery store than 6.8% as far as the food costs. And then when you look at things like housing is up 20%, 30% in certain cities. Rents are up 15 to 20%. A lot of basic services from senior care to healthcare, they're up 10, 20% year over year. So these are not just supply chain issues. These are legitimate inflation that the Fed has got to fight by hiking rates. But at the same time, if they just do that, they could end up hurting the stock market, hurting businesses. Now they're laying people off, and that's not going to help with wages and labor. So, you know, how do they thread the needle, and how do they deal with this dual prong mandate they have of helping both employment and dealing with inflation?
I mean, they're in between a rock and a hard place, right? I mean, you know, I'm always like, you know, I'm always looking for like the end of the world and crash and runaway inflation and things like that. And it really hasn't come to fruition. Maybe it will this time, but why can't we have a soft landing? You know, why can't this just be incremental? Why can't we just take rates up a little bit? Why can't we see if some of these supply chain issues don't abate? I mean, it could, you know, turn out to 1980-like inflation. But there's one thing that being in the markets over the years, I mean, it's never the same thing that bites you in the butt twice. You know, there's like a pandemic, you know, you had the runaway. There's always something. So the way the current circumstances are set right now, yeah, he's going to have to engineer a really soft landing, because the last thing that you want is inflation or stagflation, where you have the inflation and a declining economy. So it's tough. I mean, I don't envy his job at all and what he has to do. But in my opinion, the market still, if you look at the historical price action, after the first interest rate hike, right, markets still tend to go up for the next 6 months to a year. So I think the market is prepared, you know, for the couple rate hikes. It's just going to be, you know, I think our new word, he's not going to be like the transitory. I think he's going to go back to data dependent. I think that's going to be the new, and he's used that before. I think he's going to say it's transitory. You know, it's more than we anticipated, but our next actions are going to be data dependent. And what the hell that means, I don't know.
Well, Joel, that gives them a lot of wiggle room to figure out which data they want to depend on. And yeah, you're right. Once bitten, twice shy. So it's right for people to be cautious, but it's never the same black swan that gets you twice. It's never the same thing. It's never the exact same reaction. But it does make one wonder if they start moving towards fighting inflation, while dealing with the labor force, while trying to hike rates, even if it's incremental, and even if it's a little step-by-step, it may not be a dramatic change, but there's going to be some shuffling of the deck, and it may be a little less speculative than it is now. And so just one more question on the speculation that we've seen really over the last 2 years. Everybody's holed up at home, they're locked down, the government's passing out money, they're taking their stimulus checks or their stimmies and putting them into cryptos, into, you know, NFTs, into hot tech stocks, whether it's the Teslas or the biotech stocks and the vaccine stocks. And even recently, we've seen, just over the last week, a big washout of the meme stocks. AMC and GameStop are down. The cryptos are down. And some of the other things, you know, you're not hearing about $650,000 JPEGs going on sale this last week or two. Is there going to be a more optimistically cautious attitude next year if we see a little more turbulence?
Well, I think you've already saw it. I think, you know, you can stress fundamentals as we, you know, we try to, as well as, you know, the technicals and other things that are going on in the market. But, you know, historically, if you go back to 1999, if you go to any time period, you know, if you're paying a huge multiple for a stock, it has to keep growing and growing and growing. And it's great when the momentum is up, but when the momentum stalls, you see what happens to Peloton. You see what happens to these Zooms. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, people that played these meme stocks, you know, played them right. They got in and they got out and they weren't hodlers like they said we were going to be. I think that, you know, it was on the brink. And then, I'm not sure if you're aware, but I believe it was last Thursday, the CEO sold out of AMC. He sold everything. He went flat. And I think that was, another key turning point. So you invest in stocks like that, you know, it's great when they're going up. You got to sell when they're going up. And if you sell it at 60 and it goes to 100, then, you know, you regret it. But, man, when they turn and they start to go down, it's hard to find bids.
Yeah, it can be brutal when there's a change in sentiment or just a rapid change in direction in any market. But it just seems like a little bit of the froth has been shaken out of the market over the last month or so. And people are being a little more sensible in how they're valuing their portfolios, how they're adjusting for the end of the year, how they're planning for 2022. Any closing thoughts on how you'll be planning for 2022? And I know we can talk about that more in the weeks to come, but is there any sectors that you're seeing line up for next year that you want to be positioned in?
There's one that might be a little bit out of character in a rising interest rate environment, but one sector that's just been tarred and feathered is the real estate tech sector. You know, Zillow Group, Open Door, and Redfin. And I just think that it, you know, interest rates are a factor. They're still at historically low rates, but, you know, supply and demand dictates. And you could save substantial money by using these online platforms. And I think the days of the larger commissions are gone. So the real estate tech sector will be something I'll be taking a look at in 2022. But I just, you know, I'm a very conservative investor. I'm an old man compared to you. And so what, you know, what I do and the things I do may not be suited to, you know, to all your investors. You young people, I think you just got to buy and accumulate. I think it's just where you're at. I've said this several times. Where are you at in your investing time horizon? You know, if you're 85 years old and, you know, you want to pass money on to your children and stuff, yeah, Tina, there is no alternative. Yeah, you don't want to pay the taxes. But, you know, you really, what was your original investment plan and stick to it?
Well, that was some sound advice to wrap us up for the day here, Joel. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with our audience, and we'll keep our eyes peeled on what Pumpin' Pal does tomorrow on Watchful Wednesday at the Fed meeting. And when we get back together next week, I'm sure we'll dissect it and we'll look at the markets again. But thanks for spending a few minutes of your time with us here at the KE Report, Joel. And for those that want to check out more of his thoughts, we'll put a link below to the Benzinga Pre-Market Prep Show and to premarketprep.com. Thanks so much, Joel.
All right. Thanks, Chad.